that could be my shelf. Like, I have that Amy Sedaris book. I have that Rachel Ray book. I have that Jacques Pepin book. All those cookbooks right there. And that Deceptively Delicious. Like, I literally have all these books on my shelf right now. So,
you're at home.
Cooking. Yeah, exactly.
Among Books is a show where we talk about reading and more. It's recorded in person at Hilltop Books in Northwest Philadelphia. I'm Stephanie Marudis of Kuvenda Media, and on this episode, I chat with Lauren Cristella. She's the president and CEO for the Committee of 70, a nonpartisan good government watchdog group in Philadelphia. For more about Lauren Cristella, please check out the show notes, where you'll also find a reading list based on our conversation. Lauren Cristella, welcome to Among Books.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's Friday. It's the end of the week. What has your week been like in terms of reading?
Crazy weeks at work tend to take all my focus away, so I keep it really light. We're currently making our way through the Harry Potter series with our kids. So that has been a lot of time. And someone lost the remote for the television for my house this week. So we've been doing a lot of audiobooks to make up for it until we discover where this remote went.
Are you a big Harry Potter fan?
I am, yes. I know it's a little controversial now, but the series was so wonderful. And I was on the older end, right? I was in college, I think, when it came out, but I really did just love it so much. And I'm so excited to finally share it with my kids, 10 and 7.
And certainly rereading books that you might have read younger, but even as an adult, I mean, but children's literature, right? You get to tap into this whole other realm.
Yeah. The only other series we've just gone through probably 50 times at this point is the Sideways Stories from Wayside School, which honestly was the series that got me to love reading in the first place, probably around fourth grade. And I'm so excited that my kids love it as much as I do. And I didn't realize there were some, you know, maybe 30 or 40 years after the first book was published, there's another in the series. So we've kind of discovered that one together. And next on my list is when my daughter's old enough to read Little Women. It's the only book I've read probably four or five times, you know, at different points in my life. And exactly like you said, you just get something different from it every time.
Yeah. With your kids, do you ever read the books that they're reading
Yes.
simultaneously?
Yes. So reading has not come easily to my children. My son goes to the phenomenal Benchmark School that's really helping with that. But it's important to me that they have a love of reading, even if it's hard. So there's a lot of times we're still reading to them or reading out loud, or we're listening to audiobooks together in the car, things like that. And I think I've maybe made a misstep. My daughter really got into Hugo Cabret.
Oh, yeah.
And she was five-ish into six when she read it, or when we read it together. But now she thinks, well, I read novels. I read chapter big kid books. And I can't get her to go back to the simple, like, I can read first readers.
Like, grade level appropriate.
Grade level appropriate. These are for babies. I am going to be reading this novel over here with minimal pictures. So the Harry Potter, the illustrated books of those are coming in handy on that front too. But yeah, we've got to go back and figure out a way to get her reading the simple sentences, I think.
Yeah, I have kids and we recently took a road trip and we listened to a book called Wonder by R.J. Palacio.
Yeah.
And it's an extraordinary book. And what was amazing about listening together, I mean, this probably would have happened if we read together, but we had so many conversations. We would stop and pause and say, what do you think of that? Or how would you act like that? And it was so organic and it wasn't forced. And I was like, I don't think we would ever have had this conversation just if we hadn't read this book. And it was amazing.
It. We basically all have that rule where you can just scream, pause, and then stop, talk, ask a clarifying question, whatever it might be. But I am loving those moments. And it was really good advice from my friend who got her daughter into Harry Potter. I couldn't get them to start it. Like, there was never a consensus to start reading it. And she said, long car trip, just put it on and don't say anything. And then it really does hook them in.
Yeah.
And then they were in the middle, almost the end of the second book. And they're not allowed to watch the movies until we read the book.
I think that's a good rule.
Yeah.
What version of Little Women are you going to show your daughter once after you finish
the
book?
All of them. Okay. We're going to do a marathon weekend. Right?
Yes.
That's the only way. I truly do love all of them. But, you know, obviously Winona Ryder is Joe.
I agree with that.
There's that. But they're all enjoyable. Love them. Love them all.
So you mentioned that fourth grade was a pivotal year for you in terms of reading.
I was not necessarily someone who always had my nose in a book, but I had it in my head that I wanted to be a person who liked books. Like, that was something I thought was admirable. And my mom is a reader. And I just love the idea of it. And I love being surrounded by books. Like, libraries were important to me growing up. Still are, of course. And I guess it was probably not until my 30s that I really set aside time to read for fun, because I just got so much joy about it. It was always, you know, when you're in school and grad school, you're reading so much that you don't want to read another book, I think. But now in my adult life, I kind of rediscovered it.
Yeah, tell us about your adult life. You're the president and CEO of the Committee of 70, which is a longstanding, nonpartisan, non-political, good government political watchdog group.
Yes, yes. So we are Philadelphia's government watchdog. So things like the sheriff's office and other issues that affect Philadelphia and how our government runs here. Voting in elections is really important to us. That work is statewide. We don't endorse candidates and we don't take sides, but we want people to be informed and confident in the process. So know how it works, know where their polling place is, and then eventually serve as poll workers or get involved, take that next step on their journey to more active citizenship.
What drew you into this arena?
I have always loved politics. I think I remember, again, in fourth grade, I didn't realize it was such a pivotal year. But that's when Madeleine Albright became the first woman to be Secretary of State. And I remember paying attention to that and being the only kid in my class who knew about that and to care about that stuff when nobody else really did. And then I went to college for politics in D.C., where everyone cares about politics, and that does not make you special. But really seeing the impact that our votes and the quality of our leaders has on your day-to-day life and what you're able to do and not do, whether that's, you know, my family is all in business, they're all in the same business, and government impacts them all the time too. And, you know, caring about a lot of social issues and other things, having an outlet for that through whether it's political activism or just caring about who our elected officials are, was really meaningful for me.
Are there any political memoirs that you've loved reading over the years?
So many. So many. The one that I refer to kind of all the time is called The Gatekeepers. And it is a terrific story of all the chiefs of staff for the presidents, starting with Nixon, and just how they have shaped and can make a break or presidency and different models of leadership. We talk about hub and spoke. Jimmy Carter wanted everybody to report into him and was just like this next level brain. The book about him is on my big list since his passing. I wanted to check in with that. I'm currently reading Churchill because I think we need to find our Churchill for this moment. I'm also going to read Grant. That has been on my list. I read Jim Baker's memoir recently. That was really good. Mitt Romney's was really insightful for how to think about this current moment. I just read Liz Cheney's. I read Nancy Pelosi's. I love memoirs, so I always have a memoir going. Something relevant to my work. So if it's going to make me a better leader, I read Inner Excellence at the recommendation of A.J. Brown, like we all did, I guess. And I really loved it. I will say that. And then I try to read something for fun, have a novel going, something like that.
So you have maybe 2 to 4 books going at once.
At any given time,
yeah. Me too.
Yeah. I like it, though, because then whatever mood you're in, kind of you have something going that meets it. And I don't ever have trouble because they're so different. I can't read multiple novels at the same time. I get confused. But other than that, the novel I finished most recently was Chain Gang All-Stars.
Ooh. I don't know that one.
It is powerful. Highly recommend it. I can't say it was a fun read, but I couldn't put it down. About the not-so-distant future of the private prison industrial complex meeting kind of gladiator game-style entertainment, ultimate fighting to the death stuff. And it's just real enough, and it's annotated in it so that there's footnotes that refer to actual real-life cases and people who've been disserved by our justice system. And then I spoke at a press conference about a ballot measure creating a prison oversight commission of citizens to watch what's going on in our prisons, to join the great work of the PA Prison Society and others. We do a lot of work helping to make sure that people who are eligible to vote, even if they're incarcerated, have that opportunity. And Pennsylvania's actually really good about those laws. So there's a lot of people who can vote, even if they're incarcerated. So the connections there kind of really heightened the urgency around getting this kind of work done.
Perhaps it helped you look at this issue from another perspective through a fictionalized portal.
Absolutely. And that also leads me to another book I absolutely loved, Clint Smith's How the Word is Passed. It's one of my favorite books of all time. And he went to all different places that have a part in the story of slavery and abolition and everything else. And he went to Angola Prison. That was a plantation turned into a prison. And then Chain Gang All-Stars imagines the future of that. But putting all those pieces together really makes you pay attention to what's going on around you, I think.
Yeah. How do you choose what to read? I mean, is it by recommendations?
Oh my goodness.
Is it reading reviews? What's your process?
It's everything. I love a good book list. There's an Instagram account called F This Book that I would love to meet the person running the account because I think we have very similar tastes and opinions. So I love checking out what they're reading. I have like a mini book club with a dear friend. It's just the two of us and we pick books that we want to read. We've kind of pulled my mom into that too. So there's, you know, like the Lucy Foley series of books. We're into those types of modern Agatha Christie murder mystery stuff. But it's a lot of recommendations, a lot of must reads, and then a lot of things that I think are relevant for work.
What are some books that you've read for work as a leader? I know you mentioned Inner Excellence, but what are some other ones that stand out to you?
I have a lot. Let me think. So yeah, Inner Excellence is the most recent one. I've done a lot on the Stoics and kind of lessons from the Stoics. So reading Marcus Aurelius in general. I had some really good advice from a former boss of mine who is a practicing Buddhist and, you know, applying those lessons to leadership and just how you live your own life, how you parent, all of it. It kind of applies to everything. The Phil Jackson books, I love a good sports. This is why the Inner Excellence one really hit for me too, because I played sports for a long time. I was a softball player. I was a pitcher.
Oh, wow.
And I love a team sport and I love those stories. And League of Their Own is probably my favorite movie still.
And it is amazing.
And it applies. Like leadership, you're motivating people for a purpose to achieve a result. And sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. But how you play the game really matters, to be totally cliche about it. So I do love those Phil Jackson books. And I recently read Bill Bradley's memoir. Yeah.
So you were a pitcher, which is a high pressure position. You know, you're not shy about being in leadership positions. What would you say that you've taken away from some of those books written by coaches and athletes? Is there a recurring theme that comes up that resonates within you?
Yeah. It can't just be, even if you think of yourself as leader, the top scorer, whatever it might be, it's not about you. It's not all about you, right? And even swimming, even, you know, a single sport, you have a whole team of people. There are things that are in your control. There are things that are out of your control. And preparing is 99% of everything. The situation may never come to pass, but the more prepared you can be for anything that might come your way. And that building trust in your ability to make decisions, to hone your decision-making process. I think that was really important to me because I had gut feelings about things. Mm-hmm. And then I would take action. And I liked people who took action and weren't going to sit around and mull everything to death. But that only works if you have a highly tuned gut.
Fair enough.
If you've done the work to make sure that your instincts are where they should be and then have the discernment to know when to pause, when to seek other counsel.
Oh, especially thinking about your experience as a pitcher, because that situation changes. It's a dynamic situation, mm-hmm. Each pitch.
And your headspace, right? So that's even, we have a lot of Phillies fans at the Committee of 70. We're big, big Phillies fans there. So a bunch of our staff members were interested in keeping the book, scoring the games. And I used to do that growing up. I love it. And I would keep the pitch count because it's a dynamic situation where 10 decisions are being made with every pitch.
Absolutely.
And the outcomes are kind of infinite. So really tracking and paying attention at that level, I think, is something that would serve you well across your life.
You know, some will say that baseball is the literary game because it's a story unfolding in front of you, especially if you listen on the radio to commentary. You know, Scott Fransky's an amazing commentator.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But, you know, it's just telling you the story of what's happening. And I love the slowness of it.
I love it. And I love how many wonderful authors, like Samantha Power, who used to be our UN ambassador to the UN, and Doris Kearns Goodwin, these authors who just absolutely love baseball. And it's so much for that. It's the stories of the people and the game and how it plays out. And you could be the best and still not win.
Yeah, any moment it can change. What else do you read besides books? I mean, I'm sure for work you read a lot of reports.
A 40-year history of corruption in the sheriff's office was the most recent long read. And we're trying to make it as accessible as possible. You can write in an academic style. And we have lawyers we work with, lawyers on staff, who have been trained to write at a very high level. But what Committee of 70 is all about is making sure that our information is useful and accessible So whether that's taking the long report and illustrating it and annotating it, charts and graphs and infographics, and then making videos about it so that we're hitting people in whatever format they want to receive that information. So we have this How Philly Works guide that's fantastic, and it's got a lot of really positive feedback. So we're expanding it to include how wards work, because as politically active and interested as I was, I really did not understand the ward system until I started working at the Committee of 70. So breaking that down for people ahead of committee people elections next year is really important. So we're in the process of taking that big report and making it accessible and annotating it, all of that good stuff.
I see. Maybe there will be a Committee of 70 book list.
I would love that. We have the world's best educator. Yes, I said it. No, Ann Spector, who I started my career with at the Constitution Center. She is just a world-class educator, and she has curated a list of, I think, over 200 books for children from kindergarten through eighth grade that teach and foster and inspire empathy and active citizenship. And so through the literacy program, we call it Democracy for Kids, all of the books that she's picked are available on YouTube, so no teacher has to make a purchase. They're all free. And we've got discussion questions and things that go along with all of these books that draw out these themes of citizenship and community and responsibility to the community at all of these different grade levels. It's one of the things I'm most proud of at 70.
Definitely going to check it out. And maybe we can include that link in our show notes among all the other books that you've mentioned and sure. that have come up during this conversation so far. What a resource.
She's phenomenal. We are just fortunate to have her hanging out with us these days.
We're going to take a short break now from our conversation and turn it over to Amy Wilson. She's the executive director of the Friends of the Chestnut Hill Library and manager at Hilltop Books, where we record the show.
We're a used bookstore run on book donations, so it's volunteer staffed, open 6 days a week, and it's run by the Friends of the Chestnut Hill Library. All of the books in the store are just a third of the retail price on the book. Proceeds from our sales benefit the Chestnut Hill Library. So we support programs at the library, we support the book collections, and we also help out with building maintenance and advocate for the library system as a whole. We love volunteers. There's a range of volunteer opportunities, from working in the store to helping us with pop-ups and special events, and our volunteer intake form is on our website.
For more about Hilltop's hours, location, and volunteer opportunities, log on to hilltopbooks.org. And come join us at the bookstore for a party to celebrate Among Books on Saturday, October 11th from 3 to 5 p.m. Get a chance to chat with some of the people featured on the podcast, including Pennsylvania State Senator Art Haywood. Refreshments and light snacks will be served. And if you like walking and hearing scary stories, don't miss a very special ghost walk with Hilltop Books on Saturday, October 18th. Live storytellers will be sharing tales along a short route from the Chestnut Hill Library to the bookstore. For more details and to sign up, log on to hilltopbooks.org and click on events. Now, back to our conversation. So going on the thread of this book list, tell us more about how Committee of 70 has really gotten behind lifting up civic education here in Pennsylvania.
So the Committee of 70 is a founding member of a coalition called the PA Civics Coalition, and that's the former members of Congress, with leadership from former Congressman Jim Gerlach and Joe Huffel, Melissa Hart out in Erie, and organizations like the Constitution Center, Heinz History Museum in Pittsburgh, the Rendell Center here in Philadelphia, Jack Miller Center. We're up to, I think, over 25 organizations now who are responding to an act that was passed in 2018 that didn't go into effect until 2020 and then got promptly ignored because of the COVID pandemic and what was going on in schools. It was just not a priority. There was an unfunded mandate for schools to evaluate the civic knowledge of students some point between eighth grade and 12th grade. They didn't say what the test should be. They didn't say you had to pass it. And they barely said you had to tell the Department of State. And there's not really an established curriculum for civics in schools in Pennsylvania. So for every minute a teacher spends preparing for a math or a science lesson, they're spending at least 45 minutes preparing for a civics or history lesson. There's just not the same curricular resources and support. So we thought we would come together. We all provide various aspects of that. So Committee of 70 has a great elections curriculum. We have a mock election program. We have this Democracy for Kids work that we've added on for our little guys. And then we have our Can We Talk program about teaching the skills of productive dialogue for older kids and adults. But then there's other fantastic primary resource workshops that the Jack Miller Center does, and the Constitution Center has their whole lane. And if we could just compile these, treat it like a stamp of approval so that teachers wouldn't have to dig so hard to find this stuff, and then make recommendations about what the test could be, whether it's a multiple choice test or, you know, we were just giving examples of what good tests might look like, that also promote knowledge, skills, and dispositions, like actions we can take. So that's beyond rote memorization of the three branches of government, but really how to be an active, informed, engaged citizen in your community for your whole life, not just at election time and not just, you know, when you're 55 and realize taxes matter, I guess. So we've been so proud to lead this effort. There's a State of Civics conference that happens every year. The governor just spoke at ours. We're going to be part of the National Civics Week that's going to be focused in Philadelphia for 2026 as part of the 250th commemoration. And it's just so important. And we see teachers really yearning for help because they don't want to be seen as political. It's very easy to get attacked as being partisan or political for them. Books are being banned and the resources aren't out there. Meanwhile, kids want to talk about this stuff. They're overhearing things. They see things in the news, whatever it might be, how they're getting their information, and they don't know what to believe. And their teachers are their trusted messengers. So we have to equip teachers to be able to have these difficult conversations, informed conversations in the classroom.
Well, this is the moment in time to spring forward. And I don't know if there's general support for that, if there's pushback at a state legislative level.
No, we've got some phenomenal partners in the State Education Committee and the Senate, working with House partners. We're fortunate that the two Congress members that we're working with were also in the PA legislature, so they have really good contacts as well. And there is an effort to make this better, but how do we support within this current structure and get the funding?
Are there any books that you might recommend for adults to tap into their understanding of civics and politics and democracy?
Ooh, this has been recommended to me three different times last week. And I am a big John Meacham fan. Soul of America.
Okay, I have not read that.
It is apparently exactly what we all need to read. I've heard excerpts and podcast interviews, things like that, but I think it's time for me to finally read it. And I think it puts the moment in context, but also calls on people to meet the moment so that, yes, we've been at the brink before, but it requires lots of people to step up, not just, you know, the Lincolns and the MLKs of the moment, but all of us really need to get involved and find our spot and believe in the promise of America. And I think we could all probably use a big dose of that. So I was planning on reading Soul of America and going and sitting in Freedom Rising at the Constitution Center, their live show, because that always does it for me too.
Which, and that's the place where you worked.
It is. It's, well, and to be honest, I started there. It was my first job after graduate school. I was in England for W. Bush's second term. And people were pretty down on America over there. And it was hard to be an American. And I came back a little more cynical in my mid-20s. And going to that show made me cry, and it made me say, no, this is worth fighting for. This is, we've done great things and we can do great things, and we're called to that. And I think we all have a role to play in it. And I was so happy to be hired there. It was my absolute dream job opportunity and set me on my whole path.
Before I ask a final question, is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't talked about?
Oh my goodness. I feel like this is going to make it seem like I only read political things.
No, that's okay.
I've been thinking a lot about, I loved They're There and Pachinko and some of these other big tales from other cultures and multi-generational and things like that, I think, as far as my for fun reading goes. But I think the other thing that was on my mind, I was wondering if you were going to talk about, I saw a meme about, or maybe it was an Onion article about local woman turns hobby into another point of stress. And I would like to blame the Goodreads reading challenge goals on that. I was nervous about starting Churchill, which I have been really looking forward to reading because it's so long and I know it's going to take me time. I'm like, this is going to screw up my goal. I'm going to have to find some novellas to make sure I hit my 45 for the year.
That's your goal, 45 books. Okay.
It is, but just so silly. Like, how am I making this stressful when it is absolutely the thing that should be bringing me joy?
My big question that I want to ask everybody on this podcast is, what are some books that have really had an impact on you, that have really influenced how you might think about the world or act in the world, live in the world?
Brené Brown. I would be remiss if I did not mention her books have really informed how I think I show up in the world. And somebody recently said something about, like, you're always just yourself. And I was like, it would be too exhausting to try. But so many, I could just quote Brené Brown about how to be vulnerable, but yourself and confident and all of the other things you have to do and imperfect. And it's fine. We're all imperfect. So I would definitely say Brené Brown's books have had an impact on me. Little Women. I think Joe has always been such an inspirational character and the meaning of Joe's choices, right? How at different points in your life, you look back and think about that. I loved Angelica Houston's memoir in multiple parts and the same, like how to learn and grow and be unapologetically yourself, I guess. And then I do think all of these political memoirs, I always want to call it Hail to the Chiefs. I did a program series on Chiefs of Staff called Hail to the Chiefs that was kind of inspired by that book. And that's why I want to rename it. But it's called The Gatekeepers. I think about it a lot when I think about team dynamics and how to serve a vision in a complex environment, oftentimes filled with bureaucracy.
Well, we'll definitely include all the books we've talked about today in the show notes. And I mean, I do have a follow-up question on the Gatekeepers and Brené Brown, if you're up for it.
Yeah, for sure.
With the Brené Brown books, at what point did you read these books? Before you came into Committee of 70 leadership?
I'm trying to think of when. Definitely at Fells, my colleague was in an organizational dynamics program at Penn while she was working with us. And she was like, you've got to read this, Gift of Imperfections. This is just so interesting. You would love it. And I did. I got hooked and we would talk about it all the time. And that started me. So then every time she had a book come out, that was, and we've actually used it. We had a phenomenal woman helping us sort out how we want to be present and responsive to the community and reflective of the community. And she was terrific and used a lot of Brené Brown in her training as well. So we're constantly citing it. I literally have a mug that says, what would Brené do?
Do you reread the books ever?
Honestly, not a ton. She has so much content that's not the books. So if I need a dose of something, I'll do the podcast or her different TED Talks speeches she's given. I think there's a whole Netflix series. No, the book that I've reread most recently is like Siblings Without Rivalry. Right?
Yeah, it's part of the parenting handbook.
Oh, it's really good. Yeah, I've done all of the, you know, the whole brain child, Siblings Without Rivalry, all of those. Yeah, I guess I should have added that in the mix. There's always a parenting book going Calm the Chaos. How to Stop Losing Your Shit with Your Kids. Literally, these are all book titles.
What a title.
Gets to the point, right?
Somebody's validating you. Yeah. In these books. You can see yourself there. Mm-hmm. And The Gatekeepers, at what point did you read that book?
That was probably 2021, maybe. Yeah, probably 2021.
And then you came into Committee of 70 around that time?
Or I was 34? In an 18. And David Thornburg, who's phenomenal and also a remarkable reader, he's got a really fantastic reading list, hired me at the University of Pennsylvania. And then he left for Committee of 70. And a few years later, he asked me to join him. And having seen him operate in two different organizations and thinking about that, it was just fun to apply in that context. And then when I had the opportunity to be a leader in the organization myself, it applies, yeah.
What would you say, not to put you on the spot, but just one of the main takeaways for you as you laid out how to operate within bureaucracy and have a vision?
That's another book David Thornburg recommended, Orbiting the Giant Hairball, about how to operate where you can orbit it. You don't ever want to be in the middle of the hairball.
That is a great title.
It's a really good book. The other one I kind of use all the time is The Art of Gathering.
Yes.
Priya Parker.
I just read that, actually.
Love it. I think about it all the time. Magical questions, intentional gathering, how we're welcoming people into spaces and conversations. I love it so much.
Yeah, that book opened my eyes as well about being very intentional about when you have a gathering and not being the chill host and just saying, hey, we're here for a purpose.
And but, it could be fun and it could be the purpose could be fun. And it could be more intense or serious. And I love the idea of magical questions. So whenever she posts those on Instagram, I bring those back too. Yeah. And those are questions you want to answer. You're excited to answer, but you're also excited to hear everybody else's answer too. And that makes it a magical question.
Yeah, I picked up that book just because it was on display and I would have never found that book otherwise. And that's the amazing thing about either going into a library or into a bookstore. You know, you just have everything around you that if you were looking online, you'd say, you know, I want to get this specific book. But when you have physical books around you, it totally opens your eyes. I love that experience. I mean, from being young, going to the library and then later and probably as a student, when your teachers would send you into the library to do research, you know, you would look up a call number, but then you would see all the books around it. And I just love that phenomenon because it really exposes you.
And like you were saying, how we find the books that are kind of curated for us. And that's something I think I've noticed a shift, even with my own kids' education. We were always assigned one book over the summer, and it was never a book I liked. It was never a book I would pick for myself. I won't name names.
Right.
But like, I remember distinctly chucking one across the room when I finished
it
at the end of the summer, being like, get away from me. And now my kids get a list and they get to pick from their books. And, you know,
they have it good.
So good. So I think everyone should adopt that. If schools are still doing it the other way, they should change immediately.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being here.
I could talk about this all day.
It's great. Well, we'll have you back on.
Round two. This is so fun. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Among Books is mixed by Brad Linder and produced by me, Stephanie Marutis of Kuvenda Media. And a final special thanks to the Friends of the Chestnut Hill Library, its executive director and Hilltop Books manager, Amy Wilson, and the many volunteers who make the day-to-day operation of the bookstore possible. Until next time, happy reading.